Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliott Smith song. This podcast is all about keeping Elliott Smith's legacy alive in our own very small way. And we do that by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi, and thank you so much for joining us for the second series of this podcast. It's great to be back. Not a huge amount seems to have changed while we've been away. Donald Trump still seems to be Donald Trump, and Brexit hasn't happened yet. But in the last few months, we've listened to feedback from you guys, and we've tried to make a few small changes of our own to improve the podcast. One of the main things that people were saying was that they wanted longer episodes. So in this series, we are going to try and introduce a few longer ones. But instead of just extending our main interview, we're going to introduce some added features to some of our episodes. These include listener submissions, where listeners to the podcast tell us what their favourite Elliott Smith song is. They also include deeper looks at Elliott's albums and the impact they have today. And we'll also have explorations of the cities connected with his life. So for this episode, all that means is it kind of has three parts to it. First, we'll speak to the musician Ken Stringfellow about his favourite Elliott Smith song. That will be followed by listener Kayla Bolton talking us through her favourite song pick. And we'll round this all off at the end with a look at the beginning of Elliott's formal solo career and the release of Roman Candle. We'll hear how the album came about and what legacy it's left behind. So here we go then, let's get started with the first episode of this series with Ken Stringfellow. Ken is a musician who knew Elliott during the 90s and early 2000s. He's played with numerous bands, including one of Elliott's favourites, Big Star, as well as REM and the Posies. So here's Ken talking to me and this show's co-producer, Elizabeth Woodstanley.
My name is Ken Stringfellow, and I'm a musician, originally from the United States, spending most of my time in France these days. I am really connected to and touched by the song Place Pigalle, which is a song I didn't hear until really just a few years ago, but it really moved me.
Here's the fallen sun on holiday.
I've really been in that particular situation as I perceive it. Of course, you know, the song doesn't explicitly lay out, you know, what's going on, but it certainly sounds like being on tour in France, of course, being a very romantic place for anyone who's not French, really. You know, it kind of has a fairy tale aspect to it. France is kind of designed for falling in love, and tour, being a touring musician and traveling and being moved from place to place, is sort of designed to make those potential moments fleeting and kind of, you know, something that are very difficult to capitalize on. You know, you meet someone that's incredible, but you only have one day and you have to move on, and it becomes more of a fantasy or a fairy tale than something you could actually capitalize on. But those kind of bittersweet, almost connections and memories are also incredibly powerful and romantic and can endure in your mind, you know, the great what ifs. And it kind of sounds like that's what's happening.
See the man in the bar, they got too drunk to speak.
I've been in the exact situation of meeting someone on tour and having it be, you know, so far so close, and, you know, you didn't capitalize on it all the way, except for one minor detail that 10 years later, I managed to marry this person. So in a sense, you know, like, I feel badly hearing the song because I feel like, wow, this, you know, like, it could have worked out, you know, and these things can work out. And of course, like, then you also get that feeling of like, oh my God, this could have easily not worked out for me, and I wouldn't have, you know, all that I have around me right now. It's my home, my daughter, my wife. That's why it hit me so hard when I had a chance to really listen to it. Because I you know, I've been in this song.
He endures that song, mundane as it is, days in a dream that wasn't him. Nights about the top of the mist, where continents drift to far away, to keep it together for long, this half-holy day.
And this kind of fleeting nature of the interaction, do you think that's what Elliot's referencing at the beginning when he talks about being the foreign son on holiday?
You know, I'm tempted to read into it from the musician's point of view, and that seems like a turn of phrase he employed to maybe make things more broad, but it really just sounds like the kind of things that happen on tour. You know, holiday is unless you're on a package tour, you're generally at your own pace. But the whole paradox of going on tour is that it's this life that appears to have lots of freedom, but it's also extremely regimented. You know, you have to be moving and playing every day. Otherwise, it's not sustainable economically if you're not continually on the go, really. And it's sort of set up to give you a quick glimpse at a number of wonderful places. And people say, oh, wow, how was Berlin? How was Milan? You're like, well, it was a dressing room with a crate of beer and some bad graffiti. And you know, like, and me trying to, you know, find a radiator to dry my wet socks from the night before, you know, like this, it's how, you know, tour is in the end kind of, it looks great from the outside, and it is great. I'm not complaining, but especially when you're starting out and the budgets are low and when the venues are small, it's not, the romance is more for something to look back on later than like to savor in the moment. There's an undertone in the song, though, that's not just about the fleeting temporal nature of things. There's something in the, you know, his inability to connect, something in there. You know, he really chickens out, it seems. He can't bring himself to capitalize on the situation. He kind of overthinks it, or he builds it up to something very large in his head, and he's just too intimidated, is what it sounds like to me. And we've all been there. You know, you the moment presented itself to you and everything was perfect and you're in that, you know, that beam of light, and then you like completely balk. From the bar they walk to pass Big Al. The taxi
waved down, good night, sleep well. And as a resident of France and someone who knows Paris very well, is Place Pigalle as a place, is that significant?
Well, it is, in that, for a couple of reasons. Around Place Pigalle would be a bunch of the places that you would play if you're a foreign band or musician on tour. There's a whole strip of venues: La Cigale, Le Boule Noir, the Divan du Monde, Élysée Montmartre. All of these are very close to Place Pigalle, and thusly, also around Place Pigalle are A, hotels that bands always stay in, B, all the music shops. It's kind of the, you know, the classic entertainment district, shall we say, since time immemorial.
You mentioned that you didn't come across this song until somewhat recently. I was just curious about how you came across this song.
To be honest, I didn't really, quote unquote, discover it, like really get a chance to sit down with the headphones and really spend time with it until we did the Color Bars Experience tour. What was that? 4 years ago. For any listeners who aren't aware, this was a French musical project put together by an arranger and orchestra manager using players from a larger orchestra to create a small ensemble, mostly based in Angers in France, to play stylized arrangements of Elliott Smith's music. Stylized in the sense that they would, you know, arrangements were created not to necessarily recreate the original recordings and just transfer those musical moments to this orchestra, but to kind of make a hybrid of some classical motifs, but appropriate to the mood. And there was also rock instrumentation involved. And so this orchestra did a little tour, and with three vocalists, Jason Lytle, Troy Van Balthazar, and myself. Just a step to the doorway, wants all the more to bring her away out of this temporary hell of the day.
did you cross paths in the 90s and early 2000s?
It's all jumbled together. The music biz is a very small town. Elliot's manager, Margaret, was the woman who signed my band, the Posies, to BMG Publishing. So we spent a lot of time with Margaret, and when she started to manage Elliot, so Elliot was sometimes around. And we did play, we only played one show together, but Elliot did open for us in, of all places, Halifax, Canada, in the 90s. And then fast forward to the, you know, around the turn of the century, you know, Elliot being like quite a fan of Big Star, I'm pretty sure it was he who made this happen, because at one point, you know, when Elliot had become like quite well known, you know, he was headlining a stage at a big festival in Seattle called Bumbershoot, which takes over the Seattle Center and all of its various buildings and outdoor stages and indoor stages. And so he headlined that stage. So I think he had a lot of sway over what happened. So Big Star, with whom I was playing, you know, were on that bill, which was great for Big Star, since, you know, Big Star had such a fractured and terrible history that by grace of this show, we played to more people that day than the original band in its original run in the 70s had played to in total throughout their entire career. So that was quite a thing. And then I had one other run into with him in LA, and I can't remember the year, but, you know, it's got to be around the same time, 2001, something like this. I was at what was then called Spaceland. It's now called The Satellite, I believe, but, you know, kind of normal place you would play in LA, and just went in to see somebody else play. And the peculiar thing about that venue, for those of you who don't live in LA, is that it had this completely hermetically sealed back room with glass or plastic or whatever, but there's a bar back there and it's completely separate from the music room sonically and whatnot, but you can see the music room, you can see everything going on. So I just wandered into this back area and it was completely empty except for one person, and that was Elliot. I'm not gonna lie, you know, he was pretty, let's say he was unsteady on his feet at that moment. You know, I didn't really know him well, and he was such a quiet person a lot of the time anyway. The other times that we'd met, you know, he really had barely said a word. He wasn't unfriendly, but just really shy. So I sidled up to the bar and said hello, and he said, "Oh, hey, Ken," you know, like kind of became lucid. And he said, "I just want you to know one thing. I really, really, really respect and admire your songwriting." And I was like, well, coming from someone with that much talent, that was pretty huge. And then he kind of sealed back up into his own kind of dark cloud and didn't say much more, but it's pretty interesting.
Thanks very much then to Ken for sharing some of those great stories with us. It was particularly incredible to hear he has literally lived in the song Place Pigalle after meeting his now wife on tour in France. We're now going to step away from the world of Place Pigalle and go back a few years to look at Roman Candle, Elliot's first solo album. Shortly, we'll hear from William Todd Schultz, the author of the Elliot Smith biography Torment Saint, and Denny Swofford, the owner of Cavity Search, the label that released Roman Candle. But first, here's the start of what will become a regular feature for us. This is podcast listener Kayla Bolton from where else? Portland, Oregon, telling us what her favorite Elliot Smith song is.
My favorite Elliot Smith song is No Name Number One off of Roman Candle. I think like most Elliot Smith fans, I don't really have a favorite Elliot Smith song because they're all so brilliant. But I am picking No Name Number One because it really conveys an emotion that I have a really hard time expressing, which is awkwardness. Small talk fucking sucks. You get invited to a party and it's like cool that people want to hang out with you, but then you're like always going to have to like try to make like some weird connection with someone that you don't know and you have nothing in common with. The line where he's like, "You remind me of someone's daughter. I forgot her name, ashamed. I completely relate to it because it's like you're trying to like make a connection with someone and it's like you look just like this person who I can't remember at all. And when he's like, go home and live alone with your pain, like, it cuts like so deep because it's like, you can't, it feels like this really like self-deprecating, like, you can't even make small talk with this person. Like, you deserve to be alone. You deserve to just like have like no one who cares about you. Because you can't even have, like, a simple human interaction.
Thank you to Kayla for kindly sharing that clip with us. As I said before, we'll be doing one of these every episode, so if you want to be featured, just send us a voice clip to info@myfavoriteelliotsmithsong.com. We're going to keep things strictly Portland and strictly Roman Candle now, as we hear some of the stories behind the album and what impact it's still having today. We'll soon hear from Denny Swofford, the man who, along with his partner Christopher Cooper, released the record on their label Cavity Search. But first, here's William Todd Schultz, the author of the Elliott Smith biography, Torment Saint.
Making that first record, Roman Candle, was kind of a dicey, tricky thing to do because in some ways it was a massive departure. In some ways it was just a continuation of what Elliott Smith had always done. But one of the things that made it kind of a tricky proposition was that at the time that he was recording that record, which he did mostly in the basement of a house in Portland, it was confusing, I think, to some of the people in Heatmiser at the time in terms of like what his goals were and what he was doing, and was he more committed to his solo stuff than he was to what was going on with Heatmiser. And Heatmiser had become, by that time in Portland and beyond Portland too, they'd done things like West Coast tours and stuff. Heatmiser had become a pretty successful, not exactly punk band, but pretty hard-edged, you know, band, especially with its first record, Dead Air. And according to some of the people that I've talked with, he wasn't really very, he's a little bit passive-aggressive about the whole thing, and he wasn't very very willing to speak his mind about what his thoughts were. And so it was frustrating to people who were in the band because for some of them that I've talked to, it wasn't really, they couldn't really understand what, where he was at.
And how did this record kind of set Elliott up for the rest of his solo career?
In some ways, it was totally characteristic of Elliott Smith his entire life. I mean, he started recording on a four-track set up when he was in like sixth grade, and he was writing songs and recording them along with some of his friends in Texas. So he always did that. He recorded on four tracks in his high school band, like Murder of Crows and stuff. And so with Roman Candle, he was doing the same thing in his girlfriend's basement, just recording songs on a four track that he'd written just to put them down, just so he'd have them recorded in case he wanted to go back to them or whatever. So it's totally characteristic of him. But on the other hand, the sound and what the songs were like and how they were this pretty radical departure from what people had come to expect from him in Heatmiser was sort of jarring. And at first, I've talked to a bunch of people who at first didn't really like it, you know, and didn't really, they preferred Heatmiser. So it's not like it was just like this instant, sensation, or people were like, oh my God, this is unbelievable or whatever. It took a while, I think, for it to sort of sink in, and it took a while for people to recognize its value, actually, just because it was such a departure in some ways, stylistically and stuff.
And this is pretty much how Denny Swofford remembers the story too.
You have to realize at this time, I mean, the artist name Elliott Smith didn't exist. The name Elliott Smith was a name of a band member of the band Heatmiser. So, you know, Heatmiser was quite established and doing great things and a terrific pop rock band. And so to do a solo record of one of the members was just kind of a side thought. We were thrilled about it. It was big for us because it was the first full length we were putting out as a label. We'd done a number of 7 inches, but So it was a big deal to us, and I believe it was a big deal to Elliot, but at the same time, it was a side project. He was, of course, sheepish about it, wasn't sure if he wanted people to hear those songs, just felt kind of awkward doing it at that time, but not so awkward that we didn't do it. So it was some red wine in my studio apartment and a handshake and off to a Heatmiser show.
Do you think the album was ahead of its time?
It was certainly ahead of its time in the fact that for 2 or 3 years, no one gave a crap. You know, it was years before people went, oh, what's going on with this guy? You know, we were telling everybody how great it was and nobody wanted to hear it because they were so focused on Heatmiser. And then when you actually did get someone to hear it, they were like, oh, well, nice demo. I mean, it doesn't sound very good. So, I think it was ahead of its time in the sense that it just, you know, did we put Elliot on the map? Well, we put out his first record, but, you know, it was a lot of people involved with getting Elliot to the point where, you know, the name was established and Heatmiser was in the rearview mirror, unfortunately.
Are you surprised then by how popular the album is today?
I mean, I think when you put out a record, you trust that, you know, you're creating this historic document that's always going to be around and hopefully matter to someone or a bunch of people. So I guess I wouldn't think of it that way, but not for a second am I surprised that people are still discovering that record and having their minds blown with this quality of songwriting and uniqueness of recording. So I have to say it doesn't surprise me at all.
And what impact has that album had on your label, Cavity Search?
Well, again, as I mentioned earlier, it was the first record we put out. So it's a pretty great story when you start your label off with a full length of this magnitude and the historic measure of it. Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, the most impactful and the most important effect on the label of putting that record out as our first full length is just, you know, now having decades of people come up to you and tell you a story about when they heard the record or just a thank you for doing that when no one cared and it didn't make sense to do that. And, you know, those are the goosebumps and the, you know, that's the real reward is people commending you for taking the chance on a guy in a band that made these special songs.
Thanks to Denny and to Todd for being part of that little Roman Candle snapshot. As I said at the beginning, we'll be doing a few of these short features throughout the series, both on the albums that Elliot released and the places connected to him and to his music. The next one will be on the self-titled album in a couple of episodes' time. And that's pretty much it for today. Just to say thanks again to Todd, to Denny, to Kayla Bolton and Ken Stringfellow for being part of this episode. If you want to be involved, then do send us a voice note to info@myfavoriteelliotsmithsong.com. And to stay up to date with all our latest news on episodes, guests and just Elliot-related chat, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Lastly, thanks to Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for producing this podcast with me, and thank you very much for joining us for it. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time when we're doing a bit of an author special by talking to the writers Becky Albertalli and David Arnold, who both reference Elliot in their works. Hope you can listen to that one too. See you soon.